judges this week. It's been thought that it might be good just to take a look at some of the truths in this book, practical, in the extent that they would seek to set before us the way that we must combat the world, the flesh, and the devil. Because I do believe that these incidences that we find in the book of Judges, they do set before us the way that the child of God must overcome the evils which are about them. We're going to look first of all, please, in chapter 1 tonight. What I wanted to do very simply this evening is just to take a look at what I've termed the preface for the book, and that is chapters 1 and 2. That lays the basis and foundation of what is to follow, and perhaps had the foundation been different, what follows might have been different too. But very sadly, the foundation was not altogether good. And oftentimes in Christian living, if the foundation's not good, then what follows is not good either. The book of Judges is a book that has very practical lessons for each of us to learn from. We'll read from verse 1 of chapter 1. We'll read a few verses here, and then we'll take a look at a few verses in chapter 2. But we want to look at the theme of chapters 1 and 2 as the Lord gives help in the meeting this evening. Verse 1, "Now, after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, Who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first, to fight against them? And the Lord said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have delivered the land into his hand. And Judah said unto Simeon his brother, Come up with me into my lot, that we may fight against the Canaanites. And I likewise will go with thee into thy lot. So Simeon went with him. And Judah went up, and the Lord delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into his hand. And they slew of them in Bezek 10,000 men. And they found Adonai Bezek in Bezek, and they fought against him. And they slew the Canaanites and the Perizzites. But Adonai Bezek fled, and they pursued after him, and caught him, and cut off his thumbs and his great toes. And Adonai Bezek said, 70 kings, having their thumbs and their great toes cut off, gathered their meat under my table. As I have done, so God hath requited me. And they brought him to Jerusalem, and there he died. Now the children of Judah had fought against Jerusalem and taken it, and smitten it with the edge of the sword, and set the city on fire. And afterward the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites that dwelt in the mountains, and in the south, and in the valley. And Judah went against the Canaanites that dwelt in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, and they slew Sheshai, and Hahiman, and Talmai." Very interesting statement that at the end of verse 10. "And from thence he went against the inhabitants of Deba, and the name of Deba before was Kirjath Sefer. And Caleb said, He that smiteth Kirjath Sefer and taketh it, to him will I give Aksa my daughter to wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it, and he gave him Aksa his daughter to wife. It came to pass, when she came to him, that she moved him to ask of her father a field. And she lighted from off her ass, and Caleb said unto her, What wilt thou? And she said unto him, Give me a blessing, for thou hast given me a south land. Give me also springs of water. And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the nether springs." Into chapter 2, please. Reading at verse 1. "And an angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and said, I made you go up out of Egypt, and have brought you unto the land which I swear unto your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. Ye shall throw down their altars, but ye have not obeyed my voice. Why have ye done this? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. It came to pass, when the angel of the Lord had spake these words unto all the children of Israel, that the people lifted up their voice and wept. And they called the name of the place Bochim, and they sacrificed there unto the Lord." I trust that the Lord will bless his word I trust too that you might be able to keep your Bibles open as we look at various things seen in these two sections of the good word of God. We're going to look tonight, child of God, at, and over these coming nights, at a moral history as far as Israel is concerned, but a history as God sees it. And we're going to see something of the failures that marked Israel, but again, the deliverances that God brought into them. They are very practical lessons for the saints of God of this dispensation, because, of course, failure oftentimes marks us. But I'm very, very thankful for a God that does provide for us to be recovered and to be restored and to move on with him. And that, to me, I think, is the great burden of the book of Judges. Now, the book of Judges, of course, gets its name from the fact that at this period of time, the children of Israel, they were judged by judges. Before this, they had had a spiritual leader. You remember when they came out of Egypt, then Moses, of course, was the leader. That leadership was handed over to Joshua. But when we come to the opening verses here, in verse 1, it says, now, after the death of Joshua. And from this point onwards, we shall note that there is no spiritual leader. But I'm very thankful, though they have no spiritual leader, they still have God. And it's a wondrous thing, child of God, not just to look to men, but to look to God. And I notice when we come down to verse 2, it says, the Lord said unto Judah, in verse 1, Israel asked the Lord, saying, who shall go up for us against the Canaanites? So they had God to turn to. And it's a blessed thing, you know, not to look to men particularly, but to look to God and let the Lord himself be our strength and our stay in all that is before us. But these judges, we find in this book that there are 13 of them. So the good men tell me, and I think my counting is right too, that there are 13 judges. Now, again, the good brethren have taught as well that 13 is the number of rebellion. And it's a sad thing when rebellion does mark any. Of those judges, there are 12 of them that were good judges. But one of them, Abimelech, I don't think we'll get to Abimelech. It would be interesting to take a look at Abimelech. He's a sad case, sadly. And I was thinking that in Abimelech we have what we have in the book of the Acts in chapter 20, when the apostle said, from amongst your own selves will rise up men that are drawing away disciples after themselves. Destructive men that will not be a help and a blessing to the saints. And one of the sad things about an Abimelech, as you find him from chapter 8 or chapter 9 onwards, we discover a man that was prepared to slay his brethren that he might get the ascendancy. He's a veritable man that we would find in the likes of the third epistle of John. And sadly, the man that is found there that John has to expose, are Diotrephes. Diotrephes is not dead. The Abimelechs of this world are not dead. And thinking that we'll not get to it, I never forget a dear brother, Rowan Jennings, saying to me many years ago, what do you do with men that are a problem in God's assembly and always causing trouble and distressing and disturbing the saints of God? And he was thinking particularly of leaders, for of course Abimelech became a leader. And though he was self-appointed, that's a sad thing with self-appointed men, isn't it? They will always move to the detriment of the saints. A man that's divinely appointed, he'll always move for the blessing of the saints. But Abimelech, he was self-appointed and slew 70 of his brothers on one stone to get the place that he wanted amongst the nation. But when this brother was speaking to me and he asked me what you do with them, I said, Rowan, you can do absolutely nothing. You can do nothing with them. We've met many of them, you know, on our travels, sadly. Men that are destructive to the work of God. You meet many of them. And it's a sad thing to find men that are not working for the good of God's assembly, but just wanting something for themselves. And I said, Rowan, you can do nothing. And he said a very simple thing to me. He said, that's right, Norman. All you can do is wait until a woman drops a brick on their head. Because that's just how he died, you know. Because as he came to take a tower, a woman up in that tower, she just dropped a brick on his head. And all we can wait is for divine intervention when there's someone like an Abimelech moving amongst the saints, disturbing the saints. We can do nothing about them. We have to leave them. But Whether we'll touch Abimelech over these next few days, I'm not too sure. I'd rather doubt it, because I don't think the time will allow. But just enough to know that there are those kind of men, and God knows how to deal with them. Sadly, they'll destroy what is of God, and they'll destroy the saints of God, but the time will come when God will deal with them. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And it says of Abimelech that he killed 70 of his brothers, that is, the sons of Gideon. He killed them on one stone. That would tell me it was a ritual slaughter, you know, as he gathered them and killed them on one stone. It was a ritual slaughter. Well, God says, if you've killed your brothers on a stone, I'll kill you with a stone too. And whatsoever a man soweth, and he just dropped a brick upon the fellow's head, and that dealt with him. We need to be careful, you know, in all our dealings as far as the assembly is concerned. A blessed thing for men to be raised up, there will be a blessing to it. For that's what the other judges are. And thank God for men that God does raise up to recover and to restore and to bring the saints of God back to God again. The child of God, sadly in heart, we do get away. And sadly in heart, we do fail, don't we? But we need someone that can restore and recover us and bring us back to God. Well, these other 12 judges, they do bring the people, all chosen of God, they bring them back that they might serve God. It's interesting when we look at the book of Judges. There are actually, I think, 111 years of subjection to the nations around them. And that subjection, which we'll see tonight, it was sadly self-orientated. It was because of the failures of the people that they were in subjection for 111 years to these various nations that they lived in the midst of. They hadn't dealt with them, we shall see. They should have dealt with them. That was the call of God toward them. But they were prepared to live with them, child of God. We'll look at things a little later. But had they dealt with them, then they would never have been brought into captivity by them. But sadly, they were brought into captivity, and they were brought into subjection by them for 111 years. But I'm very glad that because of the judges, there were some 299 years of peace that they did enjoy. And it's a blessed thing when God raises up men that can give us peace within the assembly and within the gatherings of God's children. And would that God would raise up more that would be able to lead the saints of God in what is right, lead them back to the things of God, and help and encourage them before the Lord. So this is basically what the book of Judges brings before us. You'll remember how that there are two statements. They are linked with the closing part of the book, a sad section we'll see in a moment or two. Two statements that do tell us how that there was no king in Israel in those days. No, the monarchy had not yet been established. But the sad thing is, even in the days of the judges, when there was no king in Israel in those days, it says, everyone did that which is right in his own eyes. Twice that occurs, child of God, in the closing sections, chapter 17 and again in chapter 21. And it's a sad feature when we're not prepared to acknowledge the authority of God within the gathering. And everybody does that which is right in their own eyes. I tell you, all it'll do is bring trouble. All it'll do is bring problems to us. And it'll cause us to be brought into bondage. And we'll not have a life that's lived for the glory of God when we do that which is right in our own eyes. I say there in the closing section, the book of Judges basically divides itself into three parts. And we would take a look and see how that in chapters 1 to 3 we have Israel's wars. And in those wars, thank God they were victorious. In those three events that are brought before us. We have read of some of them in chapter 1. And then, God willing, tomorrow night, we'll see the first of the two judges, Othniel and Ehud, and we'll see how that they were victorious. What a blessed thing. One fighting against the world, the other fighting against the flesh. And I do take it, child of God, that what we have in these chapters here, they will teach us how we ought to deal with the world, and how we ought to deal with the flesh. That's the vital thing in what's before us. Chapters 1 to 3, we have Israel's wars. But then, from chapters 4 to chapter 16, I just write over that, Israel's woes. Israel's woes. And let me tell you a very, very sad history. As one after another, the nations that are about them bring them into captivity and hold them in, under their sway and keep them from moving for God and moving for the glory of God. And we might write over those chapters Israel's woes. But then the last little section from chapter 17 to chapter 21, and not their wars, not their woes, but Israel's ways. And you know, Israel's ways are very, very sad. We notice, again, if we were to look at those things, we'd find that in chapters 1 to 3 we have their fights. In chapters 4 to 16 we have their failures. But in chapters 17 to 21 we have their follies. And what follies? The follies, child of God, were twofold. Number one, doctrinal. And number two, moral. And we see a nation that failed doctrinally and a nation that failed morally. They had no king, is the section where these things are brought before us. Every man did that which is right in their own hands. And you remember, won't you? A man that made an ephod that Israel went a-whoring after. The great problems of chapters 17 and 18. And it's a tragedy, child of God. When we find for the first time that a Levite sets himself up as a priest. No, he doesn't. It's a little tribe that, or a little family that set himself up as a priest. And give him a coat. And pay him a salary. I've heard of it all before, you know. I see it around us today. But a little group is prepared to pay a man to move out of his sphere. For Levite was not ordained to be a priest. But be a priest to all. Oh, lovely honour. Eh? And for the sake of honour, he's prepared to deny the word of God. And we'll give you, we'll dress you fine, sir. And we'll pay you a wee salary. Very tempting, you know, isn't it? I never forget years ago. I'd been out in the work a little while. But I tell you, things were very, very, very hard. It can be sometimes when you live by faith, especially if you've got a faith like mine. Because my faith is not very strong. As one fellow said the first year, that he just kept supporting and supporting and supporting. I said, "Brother, you can't do it." He said, "Well, Norman, you've got no faith. Someone's got to have it." And he had the faith. He said, "And I keep piling it out." He said, and God just keeps piling it back in again. He said, "I've had six rises this year." How do you get six rises? Man, you can do that in a bank, can't you? Even when everything's going wrong, you can get bonuses. Especially if you're in the Bank of Scotland like us. I hope they give me a few. I don't know. But I'll never forget an occasion, child of God, having laboured in the city of Manchester with an assembly for a month, a new hall, to get the thing started. And you know, going every day, having to go up on the bus because the car was in the garage, no tax, no insurance. I couldn't afford to tax and insure it. "What's wrong with your car?" "Just a couple of things wrong with it, brethren, that's all. Just a couple of things wrong with it." So there was just no tax, no insurance. That was all. And going to the other side of the city on a bus, up to Oldham. And having children's meetings and then gospel meetings. And on the desk, on a Sunday night, a little envelope. I'd only got about five kids then, I think. And when you opened the envelope, there was £1. Great encouragement, isn't it? When you're in the work of God. When I finished there, and I went to a place the following Wednesday after I'd been there for the month of January, I went to a place, I better not mention the name though, Goldie would know it. Wasn't too far from where we lived in Sale. It would take me about 10 minutes in the car. But the car's still in the garage. And I was making my way on the bus. I walked from my house to Washway Road. I think Goldie would know where that was. A fair walk, pouring rain, just like tonight. That was to save one bus fare. And then I got the bus to a certain stop, and then I walked across to where I get my other bus from Stretford, out to this place where I was going. And I looked at the bus stop, and there were all these numbers of buses on, you know, dozens. Oh, I thought only, I saw one just going, you know, only be a minute or two. And I waited, and I waited. And the wind blew, and the rain lashed. And I'm stood in this thing. And I'll tell you who the worst people in the world were. Do you know who they were? The saints in God's assembly. And the assemblies themselves. I was very, very low. I was very, very down. And I never forget sitting at, or standing at that bus stop. I'm a bit better off with the Baptists. They'll give me a house. They'll give me a car. They'll pay me a salary. I'd be better off there rather than serving the brethren. A little voice came and said, Norman, you're not serving the brethren. You're serving me. Can I tell you? It was a tremendous experience. I went on my way rejoicing. But child of God, I'm not here to serve you. I'm here to serve God. Yes, I do serve you. But I'm here to serve God. And thank God we can serve God. And they might give me a suit. And they might give me a priesthood that's outside the realm that God has appointed me for. And they might pay me a salary. But child of God, how sad. Oh, doctrinal failure that marked them at the end. No king. They should have had a king. They wanted to make Gideon a king. But Gideon turned round and said, we have God as our king. And all doing what was right in their own eyes. And we come to the end of the book and find, child of God, not only doctrinal failure, but moral failure. We're not going to that just now. I notice how that the book of Judges, it begins with Judah and Simeon fighting against the enemy. But I notice when you come to the end of the book of Judges, they're fighting against their own brethren. But because of the moral failure, child of God, a tribe virtually decimated. I'd even say annihilated. It's a sad thing. It's a blessed thing when we can fight the enemy. It's a sad thing when we fight against our own brethren. Well, it begins with them fighting the enemy. It ends with them fighting against their own brethren. Israel's wars, Israel's woes, Israel's ways. Their fights, their failures, their follies. Now, I want us just to take a look at a few simple things in these opening two chapters and trust they might be a blessing to us. We're going to see here a number of lessons, child of God, that are brought before us. I think if my little paper is correct, I've got five little lessons out of these two chapters that we've got here. Really, chapters 1 and 2 are a history lesson. Because what they're doing is looking back over events that have taken place in the main in the book of Joshua. And they're being recorded now even after the death of Joshua. And it tells us that the children of Israel there are starting to look and call upon the Lord. But some of these things that we shall see, they certainly happened and are recorded in the book of Joshua. Particularly what we have in these verses in chapter 1, they're recorded for us in Joshua and chapter 15. But what I want us to see this evening, first of all, child of God, in the first lesson, is that faithfulness, it does give conquest. Thank God for that. God's looking for faithfulness. And in verses 1 down to verse 22, we're going to see how that there is faithfulness seen by the saints. The second lesson in the rest of the chapter, we're going to see how that failure brings compromise. It's a blessed thing to get conquest, child of God, and to get the victory. It's a sad thing when failure marks us. And that failure, it's because of compromise. Compromise is a very sad thing. And as I look at the book of Judges, I feel that we're living, many of us, in a day of compromise. And we shall see some of the things that are set before us here. But take a look now. We have already said that in these opening verses that there are no successors, but they have got God, and that they're dependent upon God. It's a leaderless people, seemingly, that's before us. But thank God, God is with them. They need leaders, of course. And thank God, God is going to raise up leaders. But nevertheless, God is with them. And what we discover when we come to verse 1 is the fact that they do ask the Lord, saying, if they're going to go into the conquest, they're going to go in by divine leadership and at the according to the mind of God. Who shall go up for us against the Canaanites? The Canaanites? Interesting to me that they're the first that are brought before us in the book of Judges, child of God. They tell me the word literally means the merchant or the trafficker. And I notice when you come down to verse 9, it tells us that they went down to fight against the Canaanites that dwelt in the mountains. The merchant, the trafficker, they like to take high ground, you know. I can't help but think that he might bring before us again the wealth of this world and the trade of this world. Can I tell you, child of God, it's destroyed many believers. Destroyed them utterly. And it's something that needs to be dealt with in every life. If God prospers us well, as I said in one meeting on one occasion, I would that God made you all millionaires. I would, honestly. Especially if you all gave you a tenth. Might make me a millionaire too, you know. But I would that God blessed you, child of God, and God made you, did prosper you. I pray in these days he'll preserve you too. For we need preservation. But one thing we need to be careful about is the merchant, the trafficker. Maybe we are drawing in a little in this present climate, aren't we? But let me tell you, these past years, there have been grave temptations before the saints, and sadly some have failed. It needs to be something we fight against. Who's going to go up against them, says the Lord. And the Lord turns round and says, behold, I've delivered them into thy hand. And he said, Judah shall go up. I like what we have here. You'll notice that Judah goes and he asks his brother Simeon. Now, if we look at these two tribes, child of God, we'll find that Judah, he's probably the foremost of all the tribes, isn't he? The tribe out of which the Lord comes. The tribe, if we were to go into the book of Exodus or the book of Numbers particularly, we'd find that they had the supreme place as far as the camp is concerned. They were there to stand to protect the door of the tabernacle. They're the ones that led them on the march. It seems that the Lord put everything into the hand of Judah, and if there's going to be a battle that's to be fought, he's going to put it into the hands of Judah, the tribe out of which our blessed Lord came. He must have the preeminence. And child of God, I take it that linked to that blessed man, that's where we're going to be if we're going to stand against the merchant and against the trafficker. But I'm very glad that it says that he went and called unto Simeon his brother. And a lovely thing to me, if we have the leading tribe, I suggest in Simeon we probably have the least tribe, the smallest tribe. And I can't help but think of the likes of Corinthians chapter 10, you know, chapter 12. He's not going to set aside someone that seems to be insignificant. Someone that doesn't have much power. No, you come with me. The eye is not saying to the ear and so on, and the hand is not saying to the foot. You know, if we're going to defeat the enemy, child of God, we need to move in unison. And the fellowship that we've been brought into, because he calls him my brother here, his brother here, if we're going to move, child of God, then we need to move in unison with the saints of God. And one of the lessons that we need to learn is the fact that we do need each other in the battle against the enemy. The world will come in like a flood, and we need each other. There's just a lovely little thing, and I touch it very briefly, and I leave it there. When you come down to verse 11, Here's where we have the little history that comes in again from the book of Joshua. It says that, number one, they slew Shishai, Ahiman and Talmai in verse 10. Quite interesting, significant people. I don't think I've ever thought about them. You'll find them, first of all, in the book of Numbers. And you'll find them on the occasion when the spies went up to spy out the land. And when they came back, oh, what God said is right, the land is wonderful. But the people, the giants, you know who's there? Shishai, Ahiman, Talmai. You'll find them in the book of Numbers, I think chapter 14, maybe 13, but chapter 14. And they were there 40 years before the children of Israel went into the land. And it's not until after the death of Joshua that they're dealt with. I noted as far as Joshua is concerned that he did chase them. But he couldn't destroy them. Can I suggest to you? But whoever or whatever these were, they were a mighty power that had to be dealt with. And there are things that rise, child of God. Mighty powers that can hold us in this way. Robbers of the blessings that God has got for us. Because it was these three men that caused those spies to hold the people back. Sad thing, you know, when we're held back. Because we look at the enemy and we look at the dangers. Can I speak to you, elder men? But I noticed the men that held them back in the book of Numbers, they were all princes. And it was the princes that kept the children of Israel from going into their inheritance. It was the princes that weren't prepared to lead them on in the truth of God, child of God. And we've got people today that would hold the saints of God back from going on into the precious things of God and entering into the fullness of their inheritance. They see the dangers. Oh, we can't do that, you know. Those things can be defeated. And they were defeated now as Judah went against the Canaanites. When we come to verse 10. And it says in verse 11, from thence he went against the inhabitants of Deba. Now, there are three lovely things here. Because you remember that when he was going up against Deba and Kirjath-Sepha, Caleb had turned round and said, whoever taketh it, I'll give Aksa my daughter to wife, and Othniel. We're going to see him again. His name literally means the lion-like man. You know, child of God, to be able to fight against the enemy and to bring down the strongholds of this world, let me tell you, it needs lion-like men. I remember listening to Brother John Grant over in Vancouver on one occasion. He turned round and told us that it's very easy for the brethren to do a double somersault backwards and not feel it. But he was saying, no backbone. No backbone. And I remember saying to certain believers in one occasion, we could do with your sisters putting some starch into your shirt and ironing it in. Put a bit of backbone in. Child of God, sometimes we're not prepared to attack the enemy, are we? Thank God for a lion-like man. And let me tell you, if you're going to be victorious for Christ, if you're going to overcome for Christ, you've got to be like Othniel. Now, when we come to Deba and Kirjath-Sepha, they tell me that Deba literally means the oracle, and Kirjath-Sepha, the city of the book. Can I suggest to you that there are three simple things here? First of all, I've got to capture the book. One of the problems with believers today is we're not reading. I don't know about you. I don't know what your library's like. I never forget going into one home and I thought, oh, praise the Lord. He's got a library. You don't see too many of them, you know, these days. And I went to look at his library. There wasn't a book there. They were all DVDs. And I honestly thought he'd got a library. Not a book. Beautiful case. Full from top to bottom. But I'm not telling you you shouldn't be looking at DVDs. I've done it myself. But what I do tell you, child of God, is get to know the book. Capture the book. If you want to overcome the world, you need to get a hold of that which God has put into your hand. Can I tell you? It'll give you the benefit and blessing. He got the benefit and blessing of a bride. And then he didn't only get the benefit and blessing of a bride, but she asked for the upper and nether springs. Child of God, to know something of the power of the Spirit in all the movements as they were here. I tell you, if we want, child of God, to get the conquest, we're going to have to be faithful, just like Judah was faithful. That clock goes too quick. I wondered if I'd have enough time. Come down, please, to the second little lesson that we find here. If we find that faithfulness, it gives conquest. He's going to bring down these awesome enemies. He's going to capture the book. He's going to get himself a bride. And he's going to get the benefit of the upper and the nether spring. I couldn't help but think, you know, of John chapter 4, the living waters. Oh, for the saint of God to move in the good of those living waters. As we appreciate that we're moving for God and under the control of God. But come down to verses, I suppose verse 19, it's really verse 21 onwards, when we see how that failure, it brings compromise. What was the failure? You remember, won't you, how that the children of Israel, when they were told to go into the land, that they had to put down all that was in that land. We find here that historians, they would criticize God, they criticize the nation. They don't realize the spiritual implications, child of God. God knew that to let those nations survive, that it was going to have a detrimental effect upon the lives of the children of Israel in the days that followed. And the book of Judges shows us the detrimental effect that it had upon them. And look at just a few statements that we find, verse 19. In verse 19 we discover this, that there was a measure of inability about them when they went into the land. It says, the Lord was with Judah. He drave out from the inhabitants of the mountains, but could not. Is there something in your life and mine that we cannot deal with? Is there something, child of God, that holds sway? The idea behind the thought, he could not, means an irresistible power. And that irresistible power was keeping him from dealing with what ultimately was going to be a measure of their downfall. Believers today, let me tell you, child of God, we need to deal with the things around us and the things within us if we're going to stand for God. Look at verse 21. I notice now not inability but absolute indifference. And I notice this runs through much of what we have from verses 21 right to the end of the chapter. It says the children of Benjamin did not. Again, when you come to verse 27, neither did Manasseh. Verse 29, neither did Ephraim. Verse 30, neither did Zebulun. Verse 31, neither did Asher. Verse 33, neither did Naphtali. Look again at verse 32, the Asherites dwelt amongst the Canaanites. Child of God, when we come here, we find again the failure that brings in compromise. They didn't deal with the enemy. Do we wonder sometimes why, as believers, that we seem to be losing the battle? And we're not getting the victory? And we're brought down and we're brought low? Is it because we're not dealing, child of God, with those things that would oppose us? And here we discover how it tells us they could not, they did not. And when you come down to verse 32, they dwelt amongst the Canaanites. What a sad thing. I couldn't help but think of the book of the Revelation and chapter 2 when the Lord spoke to Pergamos, I know where thou dwellest. The idea here is literally to dwell in the bowels of. In the book of the Revelation chapter 2 it literally has the thought of being at home there. I know where thou dwellest, where Satan's seat is. The assembly, dwelling in the midst of where Satan's seat was. Here, these believers, dwelling in the bowels of the Canaanites. And allowing them to control, at home and at ease, and amongst them, child of God. Is it any wonder today there's a measure of weakness? Is it any wonder today that there's failure on every hand? One good brother says, and I'm quoting the laddie from South Wales, Richard Collins, he says, Norman, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. Because we're not standing for God. We're not opposing what is not of God. There's an interesting thing, and I've got to look at that clock now. There's an interesting thing when you come down into chapter 2. No, sorry, the former part of chapter 3. When it tells us here that verse 2, only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war. At the least, such as before knew nothing thereof. Child of God, we have a conflict. The world is against us, the flesh is against us, the devil's against us, and there's a conflict. And there are some that've never known what it was to take up war. Remember the book of Numbers in chapter 1? The children of Israel out of Egypt, well, they're in the wilderness, and they're passing through hostile territory. And we're passing through hostile territory. And child of God, everything is against us. And everything will seek to bring us down. And if we are just like the children of Israel, as we find them there in chapter 1, when they did not, they could not, or they were happy to dwell amongst them. Let me tell you, if we're not prepared to take the battle against the enemy, he's going to bring us down, child of God. And it's going to destroy us. The Bible would seem to indicate that the compromise of today is the confrontation of tomorrow. And this is setting the scene. The confrontations are going to come when we come to chapter 4 and onwards. But there would have been no confrontation had there not been the compromise. And when we start to compromise with the world, and with the ways of the world, let me tell you, child of God, we're just heading for confrontation with those things that God would have us destroy. Thank God, in the book of Numbers, we discover there's a people from the age of 20 and upwards, males. 20, maturity mark them. Males, I noticed that ability was to mark them from 20 and upwards. All that were able to go forth to war, moving through hostile territory. And there's an enemy. And you and I have got to meet that enemy. And child of God, if we don't take up the fight, let me tell you, that enemy will soon bring us down. You remember, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Do you remember again how that the book of Corinthians, it would teach us that the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. But if we're going to just sit back and sit down and do nothing, let me tell you, the enemy's going to come in like a flood. I get very distressed today. I was speaking to Gwyn at home just yesterday. Even family members. taught, instructed.